Well, I want to welcome everyone. We are truly honored to have with us Rav Yehuda Gilad. Actually, he's Rosh Yeshiva of one of the most extraordinary yeshivot in Eretz Yisrael, I think, which has an amazing program, which combines halachic learning in the traditional yeshiva manner with a profound ethical sensitivity. Gilad also say a captain in the in Tzahal and a
Ba'avar,
chaplain.
Right?
Ba'avar.
Was a captain.
Was a captain in Tzahal. The Rav of Kibbutz Lavi as well for the entire Galil and the lower Galil, and a very distinguished career and a very important voice for a rational and sensitive approach to Torah in Eretz Israel. And we're very, very, really honored, deeply honored to have Rav Gilad with us this evening. Rabbi Clapper will introduce.
Okay. Good evening again. I want to thank you all for coming to the first of this year's series of conversations sponsored by the Center of Modern Torah Leadership and Young Israel of Sharon. Encourage you to look at our website, torahleadership.org, afterwards for archives of previous conversations and all sorts of other really good stuff. Rabbi Sander, it's been a wonderful introduction to Rav Gilad. Glad that I have personally been hosted by the yeshiva and was very impressed. And that I was very excited to bring Rav Gilad in because, as Rabbi Sander said, he's a very important and often idiosyncratic voice in Israeli religious life, and I thought it would be really valuable to have an American audience hear his positions. We're structuring this as a conversation, although Rav Gilad should do the lion's share of the talking. And we'll chime in when we have occasional questions of clarification. And we expect to leave a lot of time for audience questions at the end. So please write down your questions, and hopefully we'll have a wide-ranging and open public conversation at the end. Okay. Good evening, Rav Gilad.
Okay. Shalom, shalom. Good evening.
So I thought I would start by asking a question, which you can take how you want generally, but when the State of Israel was formed, there was, from the very beginning, a question: what is the role of the tradition of Judaism, and specifically of the legal tradition of Judaism, the halakha, both in the lives of its citizens and in the lives of its institutions? We have 64 years of experience now. Some of the dreams that we began with have not come true. Perhaps some other things that haven't anticipated would come true. I was wondering if you would give us a sense of what you see as the future of halakha within the life of the society of the state, the machinery of the state. And also, one of the things that began, if you read the early religious Zionist thinkers, they had a vision not only of how halakha would affect the state, but of how halakha would be affected by the experience of statehood and by the return of power and responsibility in the world. And I'm wondering if you could talk about whether you think any of that has come true and where you see it going in the future.
Okay. Wow. okay, so shalom. Thank you very much for having me here. I think that when you speak about, when you define the question, we spoke about the place of halakha, and I would prefer to speak in more generally about the place of the Torah. Maybe afterwards we'll speak more specifically about halakha, the place of Torah in the life of Medinat Israel. And I'm not going to speak about history. Maybe afterwards, if you will want, I would like to speak about the present and the future. I think it's very, very important that the common definition about the essence of Medinat Israel is Medina Yehudit veDemokratit, a Jewish and democratic state. And I think it's very, very important to emphasize these two elements and to emphasize that both of them, there is no contradiction between them, because in both extreme sides, there are forces within Israeli society that try to say that it cannot go along together. There are some extreme religious people, they will say, you cannot say democratic and Jewish. It should be just Jewish state. And democratic is not so important. And there are, on the other side, in the very extreme left, secular society, people that say that it cannot come. If you are democratic, you cannot be Jewish. You have to be just democratic state. And I think the vast majority of Israelis do understand that it should be Jewish and democratic. And for me personally, I must tell you, if it will not be a Jewish state, I don't see a point. I don't see why to live in this place, although it is Eretz Israel, and why to pay such a price for having the Medina. And in the same way, in our days, I don't can even imagine that it will not be democratic state. In the same sentence, I will say for me as well, not just as a Jew, not just as a liberal human being, but as a Jew as well, in our situation, I cannot see any picture to justify Medina Israel not being democratic, because, and maybe afterwards I'll explain why, but just in one sentence I will say, the democracy, in my eyes, is the best, but it's the most moral way that you can run a society nowadays. And because I believe that the Torah wants us to rule or to lead a society in a best way from a moral point of view, therefore it should be a democracy. So I know that in both sides, as I have said, people try to make it to a place in contradiction. What we are going to say if the Knesset will decide something against the Torah? And always, Tamid, there is someone, the interviewer, and the young interviewer, someone that from in the media will say, okay, and if the Knesset will say something, it's against halakha. So obviously, as the Yehudim Amin, Dvar Torah ve'alakha is above everything. But I always answer with a question, and for everyone, you have your own values. If there is a contradiction between democracy and morality, something that it is immoral, obviously we are not going to do something that it is immoral. For in my eyes, to break halakha, it's like in your eyes to be immoral. And more than that, I don't think that it can be democratic decision that will be against halakha, because it cannot be just, for example, cases that let's say the Knesset will say that I have to break Shabbat, because democracy is not just Shilton Arov, not just about majority, but about rights of minority as well. So it cannot be democratic decisions that will enforce me in general to eat in Yom Kippur or something like this. So this just as a basis. These two elements, Jewish and the Jewish element, the democratic element, are very, very vital, very important. And I think the vast majority of Israelis understand it, that it should go together. And it's vital for the existence of Medinat Israel. We can live together just by having this basis of Medina Yehudit veDemokratit. When I come more specifically to the place, to the room of Torah in our life, obviously, I would like to see the Torah much a stronger player within the public arena in Medinat Israel. First of all, as a moral guidance, not halachically per se, but as a kavim klalim, as a guidance of morality, of a source of inspiration, as a source of culture. And in this aspect, I can see in very optimistic ways that I think the society in general, I'm speaking about the Chilonim, are more and more Jewish in the last 10, 20 years. You can see more in the media, in the art, in other places, in the society, more and more simanim, signs of Safa Yehudit, of Jewish language. I'm speaking about the Chilonim. People don't speak about this aspect in society nowadays, but I think from this aspect, I'm quite more optimistic. From the point of view of halakha, I think one of the mistakes that we, as a religious rabbanim, leaders, or society, framework, establishment, religious establishment, one of the mistakes that we've done in the first 20, 30 years, we believed that the Medina will be more Jewish if it will be more religious legislation. More chukim datim, so Medina will be more Jewish. As much as we have more religious legislation, it will be more Jewish. And we saw and we realized, and actually I think this was one of the most, the first things that Rav Amital, my father-in-law, believed in, and this was the beginning, the first idea of Meimad, you didn't mention because that I was politically involved, maybe because you didn't want to say אין אומרים לאדם זכור עוונותיך הראשונים. So I was involved in politics as well. I was in the Knesset for a while. I was a Knesset a while, and although I make tshuva, I'm not so, I don't think that specifically it's something that I don't feel ashamed about it. I think that one of the ideas of Meimad was that Jewish state will not be just by religious legislation, and obviously religious coercion is something that it's bad, both for democracy and for Yahadut as well. And we have to build the Yahadut of the Medina based on more Havana, understanding, mutual understanding, and more chinuch, and more education and culture, and being Havanot, understanding between both sides. And because and now I think many years we paid a very high price because of this attitude that we should coerce more and more Yahadut, because it just brings people to be more alienated to Yahadut when they feel that you have to enforce. My regular example that I always bring, Brit Milah. There is no law in Israel that you have to make Brit Milah to your baby. But 90% of Jews are doing it. But I'm sure that if it was a chok, a law, it was a tnua against Brit Milah, and maybe 10 or 20% will say, how can you enforce me to do it? So, and I think it's a good example that I think we have to achieve the Jewishness of the Medina by understanding, by more culture, by more education, by more havanot, covenants, or agreements between the both tziburim. Just for example, Shabbat. About 10 or 15 years, I was part of an initiative to make any sort of understanding between the Chilonim and the team that will say that we are going to keep Shabbat about everything that, including businesses in Israel, it will be closed on Shabbat. And this will be the vitur, the concession of the Chiloni side, the secular side. But at the same time, we will be ready that the movies, the theaters, and other things of culture will be open on Shabbat. At that time, it was a revolutionary idea, and many secular leaders were in favor of this agreement. But most of the rabbanim, at the last minute, they withdraw. They say, how can you give legitimacy to this situation and that the movies will be open? It was a great tension, and they step out. Today, everyone understands in the religious side that it was a mistake, because what we have today, everything is open. Not everything, but many, many malls are open and businesses are open on Shabbat. Thousands of people, tens of thousands of people are working on Shabbat in the last 10 years. And obviously the theaters and the movies are open. So if we had come to this agreement about 10 or 15 years ago, the situation was different. And there is a logic in here, because I'm speaking about Shabbat in your terms. Socially, I can justify Shabbat, why everything will be, the business will be closed on Shabbat, because leman yanuach avdecha v'amatcha kamocha, that everyone will have a day of Shabbat, and we are not enforced people to work on Shabbat. And I cannot justify from the liberal point of view why you are not allowed to go to theater on Shabbat. Obviously, for me as shomer halacha, both of them are the same, are asur al pi halacha. I'm not trying to give him halachic legitimacy. But I think when I speak about what is a Jewish state, we have to come to any sort of understanding. And I think it was a mistake. Just for example, I bring it as an example that we have to design the Jewishness of the Medina in a clever way. Sometimes we now have to give up things in order to achieve other things, and to do it by more than standing, and not just by koach, by try to enforce. Every side will try by any sort of political games or coalitions or whatever to enforce it. And actually, I must tell you that this understanding that it was a minority in the religious community about 10 or 15 years ago, today I think most of the religious leaders understand it. Not just the modern Orthodox, the Haredi as well. And I had a sicha about it with some of the Haredi MKs. Today they understand that this is the right way to keep the Jewishness of the Medina, and to develop it even. People are much, much more open to hear about Yahadut when they are not feeling that there is a pressure on them. And just one more point, maybe just to close this specific point, this phrase, I will say that I think the way to promote more Yahadut in the Medina is to come from the moral aside and to show the relevancy and the morality that we can find within the halakha system about zchuyot shel ofdim, rights of workers, and about bridging the gap between ashirim and aniim, and about the between poor and rich people, and about the idea of tzedek and tzedakah, can the charity and justice, how to create a society in a better way. That's I think the one of the main thing that should be in Medina Yehudit, in a Jewish state, is it will be just more tzedek and more caring and more solidarity between a rich. And until 30 years ago, Israel was the most the gap between rich and poor was the less one in the Western world, and today we are the second one after the States in the gap between aniim and ashirim, poor. And I think it's a shame. And I, when we just are reading now about the beginning of Sefer Shemot, and one of the main ideas why we should start in our history as avadim b'Mitzrayim, as slaves in Mitzrayim, is the Torah remind us so many times, ve'avtem et hager ki gerim yitem eretz Mitzrayim. You know what does it mean being without rights, without suffering from discrimination, etc. And therefore, you have to know this will be our first common memory, being slaves, in order that when we will come to in power, we know how to relate to the weak parts in the society. And I think this is the first thing, how to measure what is Medina Yehudit, not the numbers of shuls and yeshivot. And the question is how to deal with the ger, yatom, v'almana, with the chalashim. So in my eyes, this is a direction that through it we can push more and more Yahadut to Medina, and then people will be open to other things as well. Just one last point, for as you have spoken about halacha, I think in a way the challenges of having Medina, it was a very, very great challenge for developing halacha. I think there are beginning of steps in this direction, but just much, just the beginning. I think much, much more thing has to be done to develop halacha, to give answer how to create, how to have a modern economy according to halacha. Do we have really answers? How to deal with menayot, with stocks? How to deal with questions of halvaot and ashkaot, investments, etc.? We don't have a real answer. So it's not just a question of mitzvot atleot v'aretz, shmita v'masod v'tromot. Many other, how to rule a police according to halacha? How to deal with, so in some issues we have a beginning of answers. Can we speak about tzava b'shabbat? Can how to run the army on Shabbat? There are this kind of answer, but it's still a beginning of a long way to go. Yes.
That was the question that I wanted to follow up with you, exactly this point. That, you know, with the establishment of the State of Israel, we as Jews, for the first time in nearly 2,000 years, have political power. Is the halakha, and even as the religious community, evolved enough legally and morally to be able to be a fully functioning government in itself if it wanted to be? Or are there principles, moral principles and legal principles that we learn from secular society? In other words, it's not just a question that we have things to teach secular society. Does the secular society have things that we need to learn or to sensitize us to? As halachic Jews, this is the. You know.
I think you have made the answer already. We are reading this Shabbat Parashat Yitro. So one of the ideas. What is the idea? That the parasha of Matan Torah, we call it after the name of Goy, of Yitro, and he gave Moshe the etzav of Sarei Alafim, Sarei Meot, Sarei Asarot. So even the legal system in the time of the Torah, we can accept from a Goy, from Yitro, and afterwards the Sanhedrin. Even the term Sanhedrin is so. Obviously, I think we have to accept many things from the world, and I think this is the greatness of the Torah. We can how to deal with the changes that happening in the world, and even in the time of Mishpat HaTorah, we had Mishpat HaMelech. The dinim of the Torah cannot and are not supposed to give answers to all the situations, because if you can just punish a murderer just when there is edim v'atra, when there is a threat and witnesses, and there is no prison, it means that many murderers are just going around without any punishment. So the Ran, Chidushi Ran, says that even in the time of the Din Torah, they were two parallel systems, Mishpat HaTorah and Mishpat HaMelech. So the Melech, the king, had a general system of how to deal with these questions that the Torah didn't give answer to them according to. So we have to develop this Mishpat HaMelech as well. We can take it from the world as well. Still, I think the ideas of the Torah has to influence Mishpat HaMelech in Medinat Israel as well, according to the guidelines of the Torah and the moral issues, and it should be with Reach Yadut and with the inspiration of Yadut. But basically, it will be based on the experience that we have all over the world. We are, first of all, before we are Jewish, we are human beings, and we have many many things in common with the world. So I think. Definitely, we should accept from the world. But still, I think I really believe that we should enlarge the Torah. What Rav Kook spoke about Torah Eretz Israel, it's really we have to take the Torah out. If in Chutz Laaretz, basically the Torah is here in the shul, in synagogues, in yeshivot, in batei midrash, in Eretz Israel, it should be barechov, in the street, barechovot iten kola, in all aspects of life. And I think this is a great challenge that we, as I said, we're just in the beginning of it.
So I want to pick up on one of the examples you gave, which is close to my heart. Where you talked about one of the, you see, the moral declines is that the gap between the rich and poor in Israel has escalated from back 30 years ago when Israel was fundamentally just beginning to be post-socialist to now. So I actually have gone around asking all sorts of rabbanim for the past several months, saying, does the Torah have anything to say? All right, does Judaism have anything to say about whether we care about gaps between the rich and poor? Or do we simply have a position that we need a safety net for the very poor? And beyond that, we are perfectly happy with a society in which wealth is unevenly distributed, among other things, let's say in the diaspora society, because that is much better for cultural institutions such as day schools. Right? All of us know that day schools don't do very well in middle-class societies. They do much better in societies with large gaps between the rich and the poor because there is more disposable income.
Because
there's more disposable income, right? Philanthropy flourishes in a society with broad gaps. But I think, and my answer universally has been no. Right? I have not. You're the first. I'm pleased that you're the first Rav who has told me that the Torah has a position.
Did I say it?
On this question, I think you pushed. But I want to push this to a different place.
Just a minute, I'll correct you. I really don't think that, I'm sure that you can bring Rabbanim that will bring many, many Mekorot to one side, and many other Rabbanim will bring many Mekorot to the other side. And therefore, I think the honest answer, I don't think that you can really prove from the Torah. You can from the idea of Yovel and Shemitah, you can bring to one direction. From the idea of Tzedakah, you can bring a proof to the other direction. And therefore, I will not try to say, pretend to say that there is the opinion of halacha of Torah about it, because the society is so different and the reality is so different that you cannot guess what will be the ta'am of the Torah. But because I believe that the Torah wants to have to create a better society, then obviously everyone that believes in what is the way of having a better society and a more justice society, he has an opinion about it. So basically, I think that this is the main direction that I want to promote, but I will not be. So I have said that maybe I personally feel that this direction is better for us in Medinat Israel, that it will be more solidarity and more caring and more responsibility on the Medina and etc. But I'm not trying to say that this definitely is the emda of the Torah. But it doesn't matter so much to me. Okay, as. אז אם זה לא עמדה של התורה, זה עמדה שלי, זה גם בסדר. לא, I tried that Torah will be a source of my obviously of all my beliefs, but I'm not trying to say that everything today I can say definitely this is the עמדה of the Torah, the position of the Torah. I have to be honest enough, although I can bring a lot of מקורות to support my opinion, but to say definitely that there is no any set of other Mekorot that we can show to the other side, I'll be honest enough not to try to pretend it.
Okay, so that's actually exactly where I wanted to push the question. So I want to frame it this way, that so you talk about the idea, right, you specifically resisted the notion that halakha should play the central role is religiously in the state, and rather moving it to a broader conception of Torah. So I think that one of the ongoing issues in America, which I think is related in Israel, is that when you open that up, so then you give up your control over the content of Torah. Right? If you make Torah the discourse of the Jewish people as a whole, as opposed to Torah being the discourse only of those people who accept halakha as binding, so then you have people who say, the reason that I believe X, which is counter to current halakha, or counter to the current framework of, we might call them, the halachic Masoretic community, is because I think that Torah means something different. And then we could say, so actually, and I'll ask the question as sharply as I can, what you're saying, if let's say the secular community said, you know what, Rav Gilad, you win. We recognize that while we don't want halakha to be binding, we want the Torah to be our guide for the state, and we surrender to the Orthodox community the capacity not to dictate halachically to the state, but morally to the state. We don't want the rabbis to tell us what to do halachically, mm-hmm. but we recognize that the moral decisions of the state about treatment of minority communities, right, social justice, all those things, we surrender to the Orthodox rabbinates, right, as the moral arbiters of society. Now, would you be happier with a society that was run by the Orthodox rabbinate on moral issues?
you say they came to me to say that I win. I didn't say that I'm happy about the religious establishment in nowadays. About the ideal situation, if you will be the chief rabbi, maybe yes. I'm not speaking about the city. First of all, I think this will be a very, very, very good situation. Now it will be wonderful if this will be the situation in Medinat Israel, that people will say, okay, we are happy to have the Torah, even for the moral point of view, the guidance. And more than that, I think this is one of my dreams. I'm speaking about bliss of endless when I speak about Chilonim. The Torah is not belongs to the Datiim. It belongs to all of us. The Jewish people, take your part. Give your own explanation. Okay, then we have something to deal with about. It will be on the table. This was one of the mistakes, that it was such an unwritten agreement. You will take the Torah, the team. You will keep the Jewishness of the Medina, and we will run the Chiloni issues of the Medina. No, HaTorah belongs to all of us. You will tell me, what do you think it should be Jewish state? Not without any chok dati, without any religious law, any religious bill. You will decide, what does it mean for you being Jewish? What does it mean in Jewish state for you? Give your own explanation. What should be Shabbat in your own eyes? What should be Chagei Israel in your own eyes? And I think, now, just in the mamash last few years, it began this kind of process. More and more limud Torah chiloni, batei midrash chilonim. On one side, obviously I'm unhappy about someone that is not shomer Torah mitzvot. On the other hand, I am very happy about the fact that chiloni people, secular people, are learning Torah more than it was in the past. Because I, first of all, and not just because I'm a Or Shebein Yachzer Lemutav, just because, first of all, I really believe that dealing with Torah is the most important thing for the Jewish continuity, for being in the same culture. And therefore, for me, it will be a great achievement if the society will decide, okay, there are many interpretations of what is Yadut about. Maybe I can say it because in Israel, the Reform and the Conservative are very weak. They are not have a big role in the general society. But still, I really believe that it is important that people will try to design to have their own Shabbat. If it's not Shabbat Ilchati, but they will take responsibility to give any sort of content of what is Shabbat about in the personal life and in publicly. So, in my eyes, this will be a great achievement. If you ask me another hidden question about what. I think about the religious establishment in our days, don't ask me. It will be much better, and not to speak about it. Obviously, I'm very disappointed, and I think there are so many challenges that we have to do, And so many mistakes that we have done as a religious establishment and rabbanim. And I'm speaking about Giyur, about we have now just a few sentences about it. I think the greatest achievement of Medinat Israel, from the Jewish point of view, the greatest achievement is this is the only place all over the world there is no assimilation, no itbolelut. Because Jews are not married with Arabs and with Druze. Almost there is no, just, obviously, every case, it's terrible, it's no avayom. But basically, this is the only place that there is no kimat, almost there is no assimilation until now. Just because Jews are living together, and it's very non-popular to marry Arab or Druze or Cherkessim or whatever, although we have about 20% non-Jews in Israel. But And all over the world, I don't have to tell you, okay? The rate of assimilation is terrible, it's nora, in the States, in Europe, in all over the world. And now, in the last few years, this great achievement, we are going to lose it. Because we had this great aliyah from Russia, about more than a million Russians came, and we have among them about 300,000 people that are non-Jews halachically, and they are assimilating within Israeli society. They speak Hebrew, they go to the army, they brought a lot to Israeli society from any aspect, culturally and economically and demographically, obviously, and other things as well. But this is a big challenge. And I think this is a failure of us as a rabbanim, as a religious establishment, that we didn't create a way, and I believe that there is a way, halachically, that we can offer him giyur barasaga, giyur barasaga, a giyur yedidoti, a friendship giyur, that it will be halachically, that there is a way of halacha. I'm not going to enforce people. And obviously, when I speak about 300,000, I'm interested specifically in the girls, until the age of having children, can gila poriyut. So I speak about between 30 and 40,000 people. And if it will have a track, a national track of giyur, that it will be halachically, with a few months of limudim, and tests, and kabbalat mitzvot, certain degree of kabbalat mitzvot. There is a lot of tshuvot about it. I'm not speaking about levater, about giving up the demand of mitzvot, but there are certain demands, and speaking about a process of getting into Torah mitzvot, I think we could do something great to absorb these people within Israeli society. But now it means that we have so many non-Jews within Israeli society, and they consider being a Jewish because they are going to the army, they speak Hebrew, they are assimilating culturally within Israeli society. What will prevent a stam chiloni boy that he have met a nice girl in the army, in the university, she speaks Hebrew, she was born in Israel, but she's non-Jewish. So it means that we'll have tens of thousands of couples that one side is not Jewish. It will be mamash shnei amim within Medinat Israel. I think it's a disaster. It's really tragic. And we have to do something. And I think it's mainly the failure of the religious community, not offering, and the rabbanot, not offering a reasonable way of giur. And I'm speaking about giur ilchati, and there is a way. And we didn't do it, unfortunately. I think it's really terrible.
I'm glad to have that answer, but I wanted to try and push the.
I will say optimistic sentence. Yeah. No, because I'm really optimistic. Chasar takana. I think there is a beginning right now. I think Rabbanei Tzohar and Rav Riskin and other people as well try to deal with the challenge. It's just a beginning. And I think more and more people understand that we have to do something to change things in Rabbanut in Medinat Israel. As I said, in other things as well, it's a beginning. But I think it's maybe closer to change things. Not changing, not necessarily changing the Rabbanut, but maybe build an alternative Rabbanut. Rabbanut Hilchatit, Orthodoxit, but Rabbanut in the style of Tzohar, and that will be much more open and friendly, not less committed to halacha, but in a way that it can be relevant to many, many more Jews in Medinat Israel. Okay,
so to pursue this in a certain sense, you know, in the United States, this country inherited an approach to religion and the state to separate them. It comes from the Enlightenment in Europe, including Mendelssohn and Locke. So the religious community is a community by choice. Those who choose to abide by the religion, religion becomes an issue that is an optional choice rather than something that is obligatory. In a certain sense, in Eretz Yisrael, some religious communities have retreated from the state and just sort of work within themselves and have left all secular matters. Left secular matters outside themselves to try to maintain the integrity of halakha. And their own social integrity as well. What happens when halakhically minded, responsible rabbanim, Jews in general, want to extend halakhic thought to those who are not really interested in being part of it, and a level that's optional, it can't be obligatory? Does the quality of halakha itself change? In this sense, it's a different way of thinking about halachic legislation. There are some rabbanim that have been pioneers in this, but it's a new method of halachic thought where you take responsibility for those that really are not part of your own community by choice. What does this do to the nature of halacha?
I think it's a very, very important question, and I think basically the question is not just regarding Medinat Israel. Is one of the challenges of halacha since the time of the beginning of the secularization, shel achilun in the 18th century, the askala and all that we are dealing in a situation. Basically, the normal development of halacha is in the time when there is all the time a very healthy or normal dialogue between poskei halacha, the development of halacha, and the Jewish people, because basically, most of Jewish people relate to halacha. Now, when 80 or 90% of the Jewish people are not, the halacha is not relevant to their lives, so the halacha is just halacha of 10% of the Jewish people. But, and therefore, the halacha cannot develop in a proper way. Hamatzav uchole, the situation is ill, and the halacha is ill as well. And I think we have to admit that there are things that should have, would have a change in halacha if it was part of a real society, when the questions enforce the poskim to give an answer. Now, when there is no such a pressure, and so the halacha react in a different way. There are many scholars that wrote about it. Can all the issue of that relate to Chatam Sofer, Chadash Asur Min HaTorah, and all the Agbahat HaChomot, the walls became even higher of the halakha, in order we have to defend ourselves from the reform or from the secular. This is not natural, this is not healthy, and we are paying very high price about it. So there are new thoughts about this in Israel. If you know, some, you have Sorek and other people that are speaking about a new halakha, an opening halakha, to make it more relevant to the wider society, and then by doing it to attract more people to relate to halakha, to Jewish tradition. I think it's quite dangerous to push it too much, and I think we have to be very careful about those issues. But there are things that we are in the middle of a process. Can one of them? Best example is the position of women in halacha and all the ma'apecha of limud Torah l'nashim, of learning Torah of nashim. This is, in a way, it's a revolutionary idea. And we're in the middle of this kind of very positive revolution in my eyes. But it should be in a evolution way, not just revolutionary, just will change everything. And this is one an example that we can see this kind of direction. There are other things that it will take more time, and I definitely, even just to deal with the position of chiloni, what does it mean? Is he rasha? Is it tinok shenishba? Can we, in an honest way, say that every chiloni is tinok shenishba and not just lying ourselves? You know, the concept of tinok shenishba is capture the baby. That you say that every chiloni is, because in halacha, either he's rasha, so we have to hate him. Sometimes we have to even to behave even in terrible ways. towards Rasha, and in order to prevent ourselves using this term of Rasha, we say all the Chilonim are just in a Kodesh Nishbum. Is it really? Don't we have to create a different? I think we do have to create. It's not, sometimes you really feel that it's not the right concept to relate to Chilonim in this way. And this is just a very basic example, because the reflections of the Ashpa'ot, the consequences of this kind of concept are many, many nafkaminot in many other issues. How to deal with a Chiloni in the times that most of the Jewish people are not Chiloni? Should we hate them? Should we just relate to them in a way of Mekarev? Or should I, you know, one of the popular questions that I always be asked when I'm speaking with Chiloni people, I'll say it in this way. I'll tell you, years ago I was in a panel with one of the famous writers in Israel, Aleph Bet Yehoshua. So he said, you know, I have a question for you that always bothers me. If we'll have a very, very sophisticated machine with two buttons, the blue one, you'll push the blue one, all the Jewish people will become religious without pain, without anything, just will become religious. Will wake up in the morning being religious. The red one, all the Jewish people will become secular. I must tell you, I don't have any need, any will, any ratzon to push the red one. But you, even you are the most open-minded Rav or whatever, lefty or open or whatever, I'm sure that when I go to sleep, you will push the blue button to make all the Jewish people religious. And that's bothering me. Why you cannot accept me as I am? So there are a few ways how to deal with this question. First of all, I'm asking me, let's say there's really a third button, that if you'll push the yellow one, all the people of the world will become moral. No, then. Are you going to push this button? So it was a question for him. Okay? So it means, if you say yes, it means that for the things that you believe in, you think that it is legitimate because you believe this is the right way. So all the people should be moral. So why not pushing this button? So it's, but there is a deeper answer, I think. I really don't think that if there is a blue kaftor button that I will push it, if the result that all the Jewish people will be religious like me, I will not push it. I don't think it's such a big deal to be religious like me, like we are. I think when I speak about Geula, about the ideal situation, I'm thinking that all of us will be in a different level. All of us will be close to Hashem. All of us will be changed. It's not that you will be like me. I think that obviously most of us are a result of our biographies. Most of us, in a way, are tinokot shenishbu. Okay, and I, Baruch Hashem, grew up in a firm family, so I am what I am. You grew up in a different place, and you are what you are. But in a way, my dream is that all of us will be in a different place. So this is something much easier to adjust. It's not that you will be just like me, but we all will be different.
Yes. Yes. Okay, so I'm going to hope that people ask specific questions to follow up on these points. I want to leave lots of time, so I'm going to shift to a somewhat different question, which derives from what you were saying. So you set out the vision of halacha, which, you know, with the Torah is not cloistered in the shul, which is what you described as American Judaism, right?
We live Galut, love that. Okay.
We live a fugitive and cloistered Torah. Whereas in Israel, there is the opportunity to make Torah real in society. But then we also said you wanted to make Torah in Israel real non-coercively. Now, in many ways, the program for non-coercive moral influence that you set out for Torah in Eretz Yisrael is fundamentally that of what liberal modern Orthodox rabbis want Torah to accomplish in America, where we have a community which is already voluntaristic, both, right, a Jewish community which is already voluntaristic, and a Jewish community that is given the capacity to play a broad role in a pluralistic society. And that raises a question that often when we have conversations between Israeli and American Judaism, so we work on a presumption that Israel is where Judaism can be real, and diaspora Judaism is always, to some degree, a transplant. And the question is, and the assumption is, you have a world, you know, where Torah radiates from Eretz Yisrael, throughout Eretz Yisrael radiates, and then there's a different vision, which to some degree Yeshivat Malei Gilboa has positioned itself as the modern Orthodox yeshiva in Israel. So I'm wondering, to what degree do you see as the proper relationship between the brand of Judaism that you advocate for in Israel and the various forms, particularly of modern Orthodoxy in America, are the things that you think we should learn from each other? Is it that Eretz Yisrael is where it matters, and the question for diaspora Judaism is, how can one support the development of the proper Torah, right? What do you see as, and do you see them as aligning, because to some degree, being parallel, makbilim, right? Because, for example, in Israel, the Dati Leumi community right now, as I understand it, they divides into a Chardal community, right, and a more open community, whatever you want to, Rav Avodah, whatever you want to call it. In America, there is fundamentally no Chardal community, and so the issues are different. So I'm wondering how you would approach that relationship.
First of all, I really believe that it can be and it should be a mutual enrichment between Yehadut in Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. And one of the things that I really believe that we can take and we have to take from American Jewry is understanding that just began in the last few years in Israel. We were used to have a very, very a black and white, sharp dichotomy between the T, either you're the T or you're Chiloni, and you have to choose between them. Although we know that many people in Israel, the largest segment in Israel, call themselves Masorati, but it means basically, oh, you're the T or you're Chiloni. And here, I think many people find a way to associate themselves very Jewish and find a way that it doesn't necessarily have to define themselves in one side so strong. And there are people that find ways how Judaism will be relevant in their lives, not necessarily just through halakha. I bring an example from the non-Orthodox community. One of the pictures that inspired me when I was young and I first witnessed was the picture of the parade of Martin Luther King with Heschel. Okay? That you have seen something that it is moral issue, the rights of the Afro-Americans or the blacks, as you said, at that day. And you can see Rav, and at that time I wasn't so, I didn't know exactly the differences, but you can see that someone is going together with him and is he fight for it. This is an inspiration for something, how Yadut should be. That everything, when there is a pain in the world, we have to be the first that will fight for justice and for saving, like Moshe Rabbeinu, when someone is sovel, lo mishane, if it's goy, if it's yadu, b'not itro, whatever, he will go, he will save them. Can this is an example of what is should be leadership and what should be yadut. So in a way, the idea of tikkun olam, that I think more mostly used by non-Orthodox communities here, is the idea that we have to learn in Medina Israel what does it mean Tikkun Olam and why Tikkun Olam it's a religious issue and it's very important. It shouldn't replace our commitments as for Shabbat and Kashrut and Fila, but it should be basic thing like a part of what is Yehadut about. So in this extent, I really think that we have a lot of what to study, what to learn from Yehadut Chutz La'aretz. On the other hand, I think the flourishing of the Torah in Eretz Israel and the challenges that we have implementing, even if halachic questions, like in Tchumin, in Shelot, in Tzava, in Mishtara, and other things, and Marachot Kashrut Gdolot, I think developed the halacha in a very interesting ways. And even the feeling that when you look at the life outside the Bet Knesset, and you see it as a challenge all the time. How to bring Shabbat to these places? How to bring Musar Yehudi, if there is something? How to bring the Halachot? How to bring? I think it's a challenge that brings Halacha more close to life. The idea of Miyom Shenechav Bet HaMikdash En La Kadosh Baruch Hu Ba'olamo El Adal Adamot Shalacha, from the times that the temple was destroyed, the Kadosh Baruch Hu just restricted himself in Halacha. It's not ideal. It's an expression of avelut, of mourning, of sadness, that just because there is no Eretz Israel anymore, there is no, and therefore Hashem just limited himself within the halacha. But this is not the ideal situation. Coming back to Eretz Israel is to take the halacha from Dalet Amot of halacha, to take it outside, to the streets, to the fields. And this is a challenge that I think can inspire all the Jewish world, and should inspire all the Jewish world. So, Chelek mitshuva. Okay. Just for example, just one more distinction or difference that I found, that I think we deal much more in Eretz Israel in things that relate to the contents of the Torah and less to the ceremony. And here, I think it's much more to, for example, I think that tefillah and Torah, can. When we take just for example the changes that happen in the status of women in halacha, so we can see, although it the beginning was here in the States, I think, but here it more developed in the root of tefillah, saying kaddish, etc., and in Eretz Yisrael much more in Torah, in developing places of learning Torah, etc., more than here, I think. I'm not sure about it, but I think maybe it says something. You know, the Israelis are less caring about ceremonies in general, and I think Yadot Chutzal is much more based on the tzada tiksi, shel tekes, shel ritual, etc. Okay,
should we open up? Please, some questions. Let's be part of this conversation, Mark.
Okay,
we'll open the.
So we know about a lot of conflicts that are going on in Israel now. We have, you know, situations in Mea Shearim and Beit Shemesh, and where you have, you know, basically very diametrically opposed. But what I've been more concerned about lately, and there was a story today about two cadets in the officer program, officer cadet school, whatever, who were kicked out of the program because they missed a class meeting because they had to daven shacharit, and the time for the class was changed at the last second. They were kicked out. What's going to happen in the long run? Whatever. You have that story. You've had also recently other situations with the army. You had with Hezder, which was, of course, the pride of your father-in-law, and as well as the issue of women singing at army events. So my question to you is, it's going to be a lot more difficult to expect situations between Chilonim or the government and Haredim, especially on the real right side, on the real right wing of the Haredi movement, to find common ground if the area is more in the middle, such as the Datiim, who are Dati Lumi, who are very committed to the state, have difficulty finding common ground with Chilonim, who are not on the left, but who are also, you know, nationalist to a Lumi. I'll put that to you.
Okay, I think that here it's a crazy situation. Rav Bigman wrote a piece, my Korosh Yeshiva, after the first event with the Chayalim in the army with women singing, he said, I cannot understand both sides. On one side, if you are Bnei Torah, real Bnei Torah, you know that Kvod HaBriot Doche. Let's say that it is Asur, definitely Asur. It's most of the poskim is just Isur Drabanan. So if someone is insulted by it, you have as a Bnei Torah to know that you have to stay. You cannot not listen, think about something else, whatever, shut your ears or whatever, and you have to stay. On the other side, if you are liberals, the Chiloni are liberals, what does it mean that you enforce someone to do something against his conscience? So both sides here behaved in a stupid way. I think both sides, it was a mistake of both sides. And both sides have to take a step back. I think the army did a lot of mistakes by dealing in this way with the Chayalim. And the other side, the Chayalim had to know, thank you, that there are cases that you have to know what is more chashuv, what is less important, and to know how to do it together. And I think we will find in few weeks, in few months, we'll find a way between the army and the religious. You have to know the Chiloni people are threatened by the fact that between 40 and sometimes 60% of the Kursk Tzinim, of the program for officers, are religious. And they're really threatened by it. And it's a problematic situation because more and more of the team are volunteer to go to the elite units. I know from our yeshiva, so many of our soldiers are going to elite units. But when it comes to the ground, they work together very nice. And you can find more and more officers, religious officers in the army. And in 10, 15 years, I think a big part of the officers will be religious. So it will be solved automatically. I think naturally it will be solved. So I'm not so worried about it right now. In the long term, even not long term, even in few years, I think it will be resolved. Right now, there are some stupid people in both sides, unfortunately, that act in this way, and we have to find a way how people will hear a normal voice of Torah that will say that. We have to balance things, and all the Torah is to know what is more chashuv. Ased ochelot ased doraita derabanan. We have to know what is how to behave in these ways, and therefore I think I'm not so worried about it. Actually, we in Yeshivat Mar Gilboa we have every few months we started to have a booklet that we distribute in all of the religious communities. In English as well, about 40 or 50,000, and we take a nosse subject that we write about it regarding relevant issues in Medinat Israel. So the first one was about Ma'amad Agoyim, the non-Jews in according to Yadud, and the next one that will come in few weeks, it will be about Ma'amad Aisha. So it will be some essays about it and some Piskei Halacha. There is a Psak Halacha that Rav Bigman wrote about Shirat Nashim, and Rav Gigi from Yeshivat Eretz Yon relate to it, an interview with Rav Moshe Lichtenstein, and few women writes about it, and just people will hear there is a voice of Torah that it is, I think it's more nachon, but obviously this is my opinion, but still they will see there is opinions that you can relate to, and there is a vikuach, a discourse about it. What is the real halakha about it? At least.
Can we get on your mailing list for this?
Okay, b'seder gamur. Ross, Ken.
Thank you for that segue.
The first edition we have here. The first one.
The book that Rav Gilad was speaking about, we have a few copies here. There's an article from the second one. About Ma'amad Isha, an article that Rabbi Gilad wrote. And finally, I have some cards. If you wanted to get on the mailing list, you could fill them out.
Please thank you. Product placement, very good. Yes. Good. Another question? Anyone? Yeah. Roger?
I think it would be nice if the only problems you have to deal with were between a modern Orthodox and a Chilani. I think that the... there's also a great divide between, you mentioned, you touched upon Haredim, and there seem to be some people who want to pull themselves completely away from the rest of society, and their behavior is such that as a religious Jew, I sometimes am ashamed. If I was a Chilani, I would have no reason to want to be religious based on how these people are. So I don't know how to influence this situation.
No, obviously it's a big chilul Hashem, but we have to be very careful not to generalize all the Haredim, to make a chlala, all the generalize, Ken?
Yeah.
All the Haredim all together. And I think there is a very positive process started in the last few years within the Haredi world, and people don't speak about it, and Tov, so don't speak about it. It's very good, because otherwise it will stop it. More and more Haredim are going to the army right now. We have this Shachar, Sherut Haredim. Thousands of Haredim are going to the army. Thousands of Haredim are studying in universities or colleges, Miktsoa, starting to work. And so there is a beginning of opening gates within the Haredi world, coming to the mainstream of the society, and they're still Haredim, and that's okay. No one wants to change them, but just to take part within the mainstream of Israeli society. And this kind of actions obviously bring a lot of damage, as you say, to both sides. On one side is a Chilul Hashem, and alienate many, many Jews from what is Yehadut about. On the other side, the reaction of the Chiloni world that generalize all the Haredim and develop this kind of hatred is bring to the Haredim to close the gates as well. And therefore, again, we have to raise this voice that will be in between, that will say, okay, there are some extreme Michiganers, but this is not Yehadut and this is not Haredim. Haredi world, we have to know how to deal with it in a very tough way, how to stop it, but not to give them that they will build the agenda, the general agenda of the media, of the public in Israel.
David? I have a similar question based on, I don't know the answer to, so it has to do with the issue of church and state, right? And whether it would be better, and I think it's impossible now to sort of like put the genie back in the bottle, that there is a real big marriage between church and state in Israel. And then I think of like the Church of England, right? So there's a theoretical marriage in England between the state and the church, but it doesn't manifest itself in day-to-day life. And the thing I don't know the answer to is, I'm wondering on an Israeli passport if it says what your religion is, because I don't know the answer to that.
Yes, it is. It was an initiate to try to stop it and to change it. It will not be written. It is written Yehudi. And I must tell you, for me, although I really believe that we have to try to a little bit להרחיק these two systems, to make more distance between the two between religion and state, but I don't think that we can really separate it. I don't think it's the right thing to do, because in my eyes, as a Tzioni, as a believer Jew, the idea that we have a Jewish state, it's very, very important. And just for example, Chok HaShvut, the law of return, that every Jew all over the world can just step in the state and decide tomorrow to be a citizen and become a citizen. For me, it's a great idea, mainly after the Shoah, that there is a place that this is a home for the old Jewish people. So if it will separate between church and state, it means that there's no law of return anymore. You ignore the... So although there are problems of discrimination against Arabs, etc., and I feel ashamed about it, I think we have to change it. Not legally. Legally, there is no any discrimination. They have all the rights, etc. But practically, you can see if you'll visit in Kibbutz Levi and you'll visit in Turan, a Arabic village next to us, you can see the differences in the standard of living. And there is this discrimination. And I feel very bad about it. Not just as a Democrat, but as a Jewish as well. I think it's bad. It's I can't try to understand and what are the reasons. And there are many reasons I can explain why it happened, but I will not justify it. I think it's bad. So we have to try the way to find the way how to make more distance between the two systems, and that it will be less coercion, and the people will not feel intimidated and threatened by Yehadut and by Torah. Just for example, the question of marriages and divorce in Israel. I think maybe, and this is a minority opinion within the religious communities, that maybe we have to think of, I'm not the first that said it, Rav Bakshi Doron said it about 15 years ago, maybe we have to find a way to have a civil marriage in Israel, two tracks of civil marriage and religious marriage, and that we will not enforce everyone that we should go to just to religious marriage. You have to find a way how to do it in the right way that it will not create mamzerim. That if you have if you started the Jewish track, we have to divorce in the Jewish track as well. And if you are doing the civil one, you have to find a way that it will not be kiddushin. Validity of kiddushin al pi halacha, and then you don't have to have divorce. Although I know the opinion of Rav Henkin, but there's ways that I think we can solve the problem. So this is a way of, but this is a new thought. Most of the team don't disagree with me, and I think maybe we have to think about it just in order to give the feeling to people that they are enforcing and intimidated by halakha, by Torah. I think more and more people will be attracted to Yadut without this coercion.
Related to what you said, you mentioned before a second track of Rabbanut that's maybe very early stage. But I think, again, from the viewing from this side of the
ocean
world, I think one of the most dysfunctional aspects of religious life in Israel seems to be the Rabbanut. So, to the extent that there isn't a movement, within a Dati world for some other approach, is the focus on content, on style and attitude? What is the primary goal of that?
Of what?
Of having an alternative track of Rabbanut.
First of all, I have to say it should be Rabbanut that will feel responsible for the whole state of Medinat Israel. I think the approach of the Rabbanut today, because it's mainly appointed and influenced by the Haredi world, they, most of them, maybe they will not say it in these words, but in my eyes, obviously I'm not objective, I'm not trying to be, they see themselves as a rabbanim for the religious people. And they see basically Am Yisrael as a Haredi. Maybe the Dati, the Shomrei Shabbat as well. Not always. Include me. And therefore, they don't think about the general responsibilities that they have for the whole the state of Israel, all the Jews, at least in Medinat Israel. And this should be the main difference between this kind of new rabbanut. And all the rest of the thing will be as a result of this approach. Take responsibility for the state, for all the people in the state, and therefore it will influence the way that we are doing marriage and the way of the batei dinim, and the way we deal with questions of agunot, of kfiat get, of all these kind of issues, and obviously the issue of giur and other things as well, and moral issues as well. When there's a moral problem, why we don't hear the voice of Rabbanim about moral issues within Medinat Israel? Because Rabbanut is just Shabbat and Kashrut. This is a distortion. This is not Yadut. Yadut is obviously, first of all, Tzedek and Tzedakah and all the other things. So, and I think today there is more openness to this kind of approach of Yadut. And therefore, the time actually had come to this kind of Rabbanut, of Yadut in Israel.
The only time we ever hear about Hargal is in the army. Why is that? How do we make a connection to the people who consider themselves Hargal? It seems like a community that helps bridge that other gap instead of sort of this direction, the other direction. Why is it we only hear about Hargal when we're talking about the army? Where are they? Where are they?
No, I don't think it's related necessarily to the army. I disagree. I think a Haredi Leumi, there are people that really believe that basically the differences will be regarding general culture, about going to university, about involving in Western culture in general, about position of women, about yachas le'acher, le'goy, to non-Jews. So it's a set of values that basically adapt the mainstream of the Haredi world, except the fact that we are Zionists, we go to the army and we support the Medinat Israel, etc. But in a way, I really find that we're not in the same track. Although we wear different, very similar kippot, but Rav Levanon that says that we should prefer to stand in front of Kitat Yorim. How do you say Kitat Yorim?
Firing squad.
Yeah?
Firing squad.
Firing squad. Not to listen to Shirat Nashim, to singing of women. For me, it's not. I really think we are not in the same religion. I don't know. It's the same Torah, the same halacha. So although we consider to be the same Tzionut Datit, religious Zionism, it's completely different. So it's not just regarding the army, and I think on the other hand, just to try to understand it and to explain it, I think people feel so threatened by the Western culture and by the metiranut,
materiality.
Not materialism, permissiveness. And the, all the questions of the pornography all around, in internet, in other places, in media, etc. And therefore, maybe the Haredi was right. We have to go back to our ghettos just to close ourselves. And I think I can understand it. It's much more dangerous to deal with in an open way in the world. Just for example, in my yeshiva, when you educate people that you have to ask questions and you have to think, you just can hope that you'll have the answers that you want. And there is a price that you pay. But because I believe in free choice, I believe that Hashem gave us our brain and our thoughts in order to think, to use it. We cannot just lavot et Hashem in our bodies and not in our brain, and therefore, this is a dangerous way, but to live is dangerous, you know. And therefore, I think this is a real emunah. You have to know the alternatives. You have to ask questions. You have to think. And then we have to choose the right choice. So. But there are people that are afraid. And therefore, they just don't think or try to prevent as much as you can temptations and experiences for outside the Torah world and the Israeli world. And therefore, they feel intimidated. Both sides, as I said, feel intimidated and threatened by the other side. They are going to close themselves in this multicultural system or society that we develop in Israel, as in here.
Okay, I think I'm going to take moderator's privilege. So first of all, I want to follow Rabbi Singer in doing product placement and just tell everyone that Sunday night we're going to have journalist Uriel Heilman here talking specifically about the Beit Shemesh issues and the broader issues of the splits in Israeli society. Sunday night here, 8:15 also?
7:30.
Okay, 7:30 here Sunday night. I hope that many of you will be back for that conversation. So I wanted to ask a last question. Which I think Rabbi Sender mentioned earlier that you're the son-in-law of Rav Amital. And part of the conversation that takes place a lot in America about modern Orthodoxy is a sort of insecurity about how one relates to the past. Modern Orthodoxy, in large measure, roots itself exclusively in the legacy of Rabbi Soloveitchik. We could talk about whether that's a good thing or not. And that creates a certain paralysis because, right, as opposed to moving confidently into the future as saying this is the natural continuation of the past. And I was wondering how you would situate yourself, not just if you set out a program for the future, and to some degree situated yourself in the present, but how do you see yourself and the things you advocate for as emerging? Do you see this as a necessary revolution taking place because of the impact of the West and the existence of the state? Or do you see the vision you're advocating as the natural continuation of the past of Judaism? Do you see it rooted specifically in particular figures like Rav Amital, on earlier figures in the state, right? Where do you see yourself, you know, relative to the past, and where do you draw your inspiration from in that regard?
I think the most meaningful change in Jewish society, in the Jewish people, actually, the last 2,000 years, maybe, was the two main events that happened in the last 200 years. One is secularism, and the second is the Tzionut. I think the Tzionut Zionism and secularism are the two main changes that happened within Jewish society. And basically, I think that both of them affected the Yahadut in a way that we cannot still measure. I think the one that started to deal with these two issues, in my eyes, in the largest way, was Rav Kook. But obviously he passed away 75 years ago, before the establishment of the state of Israel. And I think having a Medina is a great challenge and a great change within Jewish history and within the development of not just the Jewish history, but the Yahadut as well. And we are still in the beginning of the challenge, how to deal with having Medina, at the same time, how to deal with building Yahadut after the Shoah. I think we didn't start yet to deal from the theological point of view with what is the Shoah about and what is the relation between Shoah and Medina and Western culture and modernism and postmodernism. All these challenges, I think, bring us to a new era that, in a way, we cannot just say, it wouldn't be honest to say that we just continue and just because I really think that reality is so challenging and so different that we have to try to find our own way, basically based on the past and the way that they paved for us. In my eyes, I'm very, very influenced by Rav Kook. I think that he misunderstood by many of his students. I think he started a way to enlarge our horizons of what is Yahadut about, what is Torah about, and we just have to take it to our time. In a way, I really believe that the challenges that we have to deal with are so great, and we have to do it together. We have to go out of our segments. We have to go out of the box and to think together with people from different methods and different segments. How to take Yahadut to make it relevant to the next generation? Because in my eyes, one of the greatness of Yahadut is when, just for example, I always take two figures that are as the greatest from some extent, the Rambam and Rav Kook. How the Rambam took the philosophia Yevanit, the Greek philosophy, and he dealt with it, and he not just b'dievid, he saw it as something that can develop Yahadut, how we built Moreh Nevuchim, how we really believed that this is a way that Hashem speaks to us through history. So in a way, the challenge that we have in our days are not less in importance than it was in his days. How to take it and to develop Yahadut in this direction, this is one of the main challenges. So I cannot seem define myself exactly as a Talmid of someone specifically. I got a lot from Rav Amital, he's Mori Verabi, but I really think Rav Amital always says, I do not want that you will be to this Talmidim Amitalim Ktanim. I don't need the small Amitals. You have to be what you are. Ken? And there is a famous Hasidic story that says the Hasidim came to the Rebbe and said, why you change of what your father did? Ken? You're supposed to continue him. So he said, I continue exactly what he did. He changed from his father, and I'm changing from my father. Because the challenges are all the time new challenges.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you for having me. Toda rabba.
I
feel bad about my English.
It's fine. Even in the back of the room, I could understand almost everything.
Okay.
One point I want to follow up, but I didn't think it was appropriate to do it.
What religion?
Yes, Jewish.
The idea of this.
I don't know if that's a great idea.
Disparity in income, the increasing income gap, is something even to worry about. In fact, maybe it could even be a good thing.
Have you guessed?
Yes. Well, do you have a question? Why my finger is wrong? You know, at the end of last year, President Obama spoke on this topic. And I have a vague one. He presented a graph, approximately, maybe 1960. And the one trace was inflation. Approximately, I don't remember.
There was another trace with the being a immigrant to the lower income segment of society. And it was clear from that draft that
I'm not holding my standard of opinion.
It's great. I hope people understood.
Overall,
there is something.
Well, the president, this is something in my mind to sell. Yeah? But then, his purpose of showing this graph wasn't to celebrate, but then he showed a curve like this. And this is the income growth of the wealthy. And so he's saying what a tragedy that the gap is increased without looking at the result that this is raising everybody. So the focus that this is
Was going to summarize time, pause the video, and then start over.
We were a feudal society, that's as in the Middle Ages, where you have peasants that work in the fields, and you have the people in the castle. Where the limit of what a person can produce is what he can produce with his hands. So there's almost a fixed amount of wealth per person. If you concentrate wealth in the hands of a few, the lower segments will suffer. But in a capitalist society, by assembling capital, it allows us to multiply.